Welcome to Wellbeing and You with the counselling team at Western Sydney University. I'm Erin.
And I'm Paula. We're passionate about supporting students to make the most of the university experience.
With this podcast, we're going to introduce you to a few members of our team and tell you about many of the great services and resources here to help you at university. Let's get started. On this episode today, we welcome Emma. Emma is the Mental Health Coordinator and heads up the Mental Health and Wellbeing team. Thank you so much for joining us, Emma. We are so excited to have you as our very first guest.
Thank you, Erin and Paula. I'm very excited to be here. So hopefully I've got something that'll be of use for you to hear about our Mental Health and Wellbeing team.
Excellent. Well, on that note, can you tell us a little bit about the Mental Health and Wellbeing team, and what would you say are the three most important things that staff and students really should know about our Mental Health and Wellbeing team?
Sure. So the Mental Health and Wellbeing team has been in existence at Western Sydney University since 2012, and it sits currently in the wellbeing services. So it's part of the wellbeing services and sitting within, you know, working alongside counselling, welfare, disability. So we are a student support team, but we're a systemic support team in that we're often supporting staff to support students. So I thought the three, when you said, three most important things that we do. We do student assessment and referral. We look at, sometimes there are particular issues that come up around students and their behaviours or their presentations or their concerns, distressing, presentations. And so we will be involved in assessing those students and supporting those students and making referrals to the right services, maybe in wellbeing or maybe outside of wellbeing. We also do what we call staff consultation and response. So we actually are available for staff to contact us anytime to run by a scenario test, you know, maybe a situation or an issue that they might need some advice or guidance around students or their relationship with students around mental health or concerning behaviours. And that's what we call staff consultation and response, so that it's not really counselling staff, it's very, very much supporting staff in their role to support students, academic or professional staff. And our other thing that we do, the team, is quite integral in the strategy and policy development. So we see a lot of our work as being developmental, and we think about that in terms of prevention, promotion and early intervention. So that strategy work is working across the system, looking at the mental health and wellbeing strategy, how relevant that is to our service provision, but also making sure we link outside externally with key partners in the community and nationally. And then we also do a lot of development, which is our prevention and promotion training. So, some training workshops, upskilling people around recognising and understanding mental health.
A huge role and so much stuff that you guys are involved in. What do you think takes up the majority of your time? Because I reckon that for a lot of staff members, it must be really hard when they're working with students who are experiencing significant mental health concerns and just not knowing how to support a student or what they can do or what they need to do for someone. And I suppose that's only one part of the role. What do you think, makes up the biggest part? Where do you spend most of your time?
Well, that's helpful, that question. I've been just reviewing that over the last kind of couple of weeks, in that we're realising that we have a lot of need to continue to support students at the front line. And so it's not just me in the team. We have mental health advisors. Currently we have three mental health advisors. So when you say what takes up our time, those mental health advisors are often the front line who are working, doing the assessment and referral. So assessing students and making sure those students get the right support, referral to the right support services. So that, you would say that predominantly what I've noticed, particularly during COVID times, is those team members are really actually frontline supporting students. However, my role has been really, as a coordinator, is really about working across services, across teams, helping staff. So taking up most of my time is much more looking at content development, looking at training and workshop support so that we can get, it's far more systemic so that we don't, I guess my thing is I always say, let's not work from the bottom of the cliff, let's work at the top and make supporting more people, raising more awareness around mental health, mental illness and services. So what takes up a lot of my time is navigating and managing all of those partnerships and relationships and making sure we're keeping that systemic approach alive so that we don't burn out at the bottom of the cliff with just seeing lots and lots and lots of people with mental health issues.
Absolutely. Thank you, Emma. I think that's fantastic. I mean, just hearing about the amount of work that's involved as part of your role, I think that I personally have felt that it's a great support system that you have set up, that the mental health wellbeing team has for staff. So I've used your support and the rest of your team's support quite a lot. I think it's fantastic. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. So just another question. Can you tell us a little bit about your career before coming into this role? I know you have a wealth of experience, but I'd like to hear a little bit more if that's okay.
Yeah, I will. I will try. I'll make it brief because I'll try. I don't mean make it brief, but I've tried to go down rabbit holes. I've been, working in, I graduated back in 1990. So if you do the maths, that's quite a long time, but I'm not going to carry on about that. Really, I guess the point is that I have worked across many fields. I've worked across the mental health field a lot. I worked very early in the mental health field in the time when they were closing institutions and the Richmond Report paper said, let's close institutions and put people with mental illness back in. So I was involved in supporting people coming back into the community. I have worked across some other areas, child protection and child welfare in the Northern Territory. I did some significant work in HIV and AIDS work in the... So that was when the AIDS crisis was unfolding. I'm saying sort of some themes of the different work that I've done because I've travelled a lot. I've worked in New Zealand. My community mental health work was in New Zealand in regional North Island, New Zealand. So that was quite interesting. As people were coming out of mental health and coming into community, a lot of community development with people with mental illness. I've worked in London, both in the HIV work, supporting people at the treatment centre with HIV and AIDS, but then also working in mental health. So in Camden, if anyone knows London, Camden's quite a interesting area and there was a high degree of homelessness. So my job was working with people who were homeless with mental illness. So a lot of my appointments were with people on the street in London, in Belsize Park in Camden. So that was really interesting and I loved that job. More recently, I thought that probably of what is relevant to this role is I did work in a series of high schools in Victoria for a little while in student mental health. And then whilst doing that, I was also in private practice, so running a private practice in counselling for families, so doing family work. But then I left Victoria, left Australia, took my family of three children and husband and moved to England, and I got a job at Nottingham Trent University. So that was back in... that was about 13 or 14 years ago, and I was working at Nottingham Trent in the role of what they called a progression support officer, and it was the beginning of mental health in universities. And so England at the time was probably about 10 years ahead having a mental health framework for universities, and I was a progression support officer, and they were very big on not naming my role as a mental health advisor or a mental health coordinator because they didn't want to stigmatise people with mental health issues. So it was actually about progression and how to help students with academic and social and emotional progression. So I still hold on to that as a philosophy because I think that's a really healthy way of defining support, progression support. So I worked there for about 3.5 years, and then I came back to Australia and I took on a role at Lifeline Australia as National Mental Health Policy Officer and worked there for about 12 months and that was based in Canberra, but I was doing far too much travel, and so I opened up my own private practice. By this stage, I think by this stage I've done 20 years of work, and I thought it's time for private practice, which I've been doing now for about 12 years here, and but I've reduced that down to a much smaller load, and I've been working at Western Sydney University for the last 8 years, and in my role here it's been in the mental health field. So I've done, you know, I've skipped sort of around that for you, Paula. I've done a whole lot of things, a whole lot of training, development, but I try to make it sound more interesting, just giving you my jobs list.
Yeah, well, thank you, Emma. It sounds very interesting. I mean, it really does sound like you've had lots and lots of experience, and, you know, like you said, there are things that have stayed with you and that you continue to kind of work from in terms of the philosophy around your role currently.
Yeah. Yeah,
how lucky are we that we have this wealth of experience at Western? I think that's and it's so many things I didn't know, Emma, about all those different roles that you've had. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, it's funny how much you like work defines so many things that, you know, you look back and realise there's been so many decisions in my life, but it's often been about work because I love my work so much that I've let work take me places that are so interesting, and yeah, it's been the kind of core thread.
And what do you think is your favourite part of your job currently?
Look, I've always maintained the opportunity to work beside people, the humility of working with people. I always find that is my favourite, is the listening and the share, you know, having the privilege to share people's experience or their story or witness their story. So, and that is, whether I call those people clients, students or staff, really what I find is it's the relationship. So that's the favourite part of my job, is the opportunity to listen and to learn. And, you know, I think I'm always inspired by witnessing growth of people recovering or people having, you know, skills and coping through resilient, you know, sort of ways of managing their stress and their adversity. I think that's amazing.
And there's certainly been a lot of that over the last, since March, the last 4 or 5 months, we've witnessed a lot of stress and a lot of adversity. What are some of the things, Emma, that you've been seeing over the last couple of months? What are some of the common themes that you've been hearing people talk about with you?
Look, I in my role, I'm definitely supporting staff to support students. So I'm witnessing or hearing a lot of people talk about complexity, the complexity of issues at the moment. There's a deeper sense of seriousness around what people are dealing with, you know, the stresses and the triggers of, you know, where people get pushed to. So I think isolation has really exacerbated people's stresses and triggers. So if they weren't coping with some family dysfunction, that's become, you know, more paramount or more obvious. If they were feeling, you know, socially isolated and anxious, then that's maybe become more so since COVID. I think, unfortunately, it's not been a positive growth period for a lot of people. And I noticed that staff and students are really feeling that. What I'm noticing now, and it often happens after a crisis, is a high level of fatigue, where people have coped with the stress and coped with the immediacy of, you know, having to bunker down and, you know, going to lockdown. But I think it's interesting, even just noticing what's happening in Victoria this week. You know, people are starting to feel very resentful, very disturbed, very, you know, unrest is rising because people are tired of the isolation and the stress, and there's no end in sight. So that uncertainty, I think, is really eaten by it, people.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't agree more, Emma. I thought, even for myself, just listening to the radio this morning, we're recording this just as more areas of Melbourne are starting to go into lockdown. And I noticed that little feeling in my tummy of like, oh, you know, everything's been going quite well in New South Wales at the moment. And there was that little feeling of, oh, what are we going to do if this starts to rear its head in Sydney as well?
I think it is rearing its head, but I think it's coming slowly. I guess that was the original plan, was that, you know, contain and get everything ready before it hits in such a, you know, like the scale and size it could hit. But, you know, it's not a nice feeling. I think it's impacting a lot of people about how they're going to cope and how they are coping. So, that's what I'm noticing, and how important it is for us to continue to support each other and support staff and support students and let people know that we're here.
So for anyone say, for example, like myself, who's having those funny feelings in the tummy, who are struggling a little bit with that sense of, you know, anxiety, or, you know, that saying, waiting for the other shoe to drop, kind of just, you know, I guess being vigilant and waiting for things to happen, that heightened level of anxiety. For you, Emma, what would you say is one thing that someone could do who might be feeling that way, something that they could do to just improve their well-being or help their resilience or help them cope? What advice would you give?
Okay, so particularly in a lot of my counselling work, I talk to people and give them the opportunity to reflect on, you know, what's worked for them in the past and think about lightening the load. I think everybody has coping skills. Everybody has a level of capacity to step outside of stress and find something that lightens the load. So I use that language a lot about, you know, maybe some exercise, maybe distraction from the things that are stressful, but really laughing and having fun. And I know that's so hard in this environment, but I do, something I say to a lot of people is put a holiday in every week. So instead of waiting for our annual holiday, you know, in January when we all think we're going to the beach, put a holiday in every week. And that could be 3 hours. It might be going for a walk with your family. It might be going for a laugh. It might be playing a game. But I'm really talking a lot to a lot of people about finding fun again, because it's just missing at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. You're so generous with your time, Emma, and with your advice there. There's a couple of things I'm going to be concentrating on. I'm going to think now about how I can make a holiday this week and some things that might make me laugh. I don't know. What about you, Paula? What do you think you might take from that?
Yeah, look, I really like that idea of taking a holiday. You know, I think that sometimes just feeling and acting as though you're on holiday or vacation can really help to improve the moment, you know, day by day, present moments. And I think that it's really helpful when there's a lot of stress, a lot of crisis kind of in the background, a lot of uncertainty. So I really like that. So thank you, Emma. You brought that to the forefront of my mind. I'm really going to try to do that more so now.
I think with students, and particularly now with isolation and maybe the prospect of what happens if this, we have to stay home again, I have to kind of find creative ways to find contentment. And, you know, I know within our family, you know, we've sort of brought in this let's walk each day, but, you know, doing some baking or doing some learning a new skill or learning something that you wouldn't normally do, stepping outside of your comfort zone to kind of be open-minded. I think a lot of those things are just preventative and actually distract you from the burden of what reality is. So that's good.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Emma. We've really loved having you on the podcast. And that's all the time that we've got today. There's my line. We're coming to the end of the time that we've got today. Thank you so much, Emma. And we look forward to having everyone with us again on our next episode. So stay
thank
tuned
you.
For more.
Thanks for listening. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Bye. Bye.